You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Find us online at cjsf.ca, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Okay, so the nominations are out, and I want to know, which movie are you rooting for to win Best Motion Picture? Should the award go to Rice Boy Sleeps?
Hey, Rice Boy! Loser!
Don't call me that!
Why the other kid's not in trouble? They be racist to him every day.
Babysitter.
La face me dit quoi?
Ah, c'est parce que je ressemble à Brigitte Bardot.
Falcon Lake.
Je pensais ça, ma mère. C'est de sortir seul toute ma vie.
T'es pas seul là. Il y aura toujours ton fantôme.
Brother.
Michael.
I'm Aisha. I know your brother, Francis. Everyone knows him.
Viking.
Dans quelques heures, nos cinq astronautes se poseront sur Mars.
Or will it be Summer with Hope?
شما فرض کن یه درصد من این مسابقه کوپتی رو برنده نشم. میخواد چیکار کنه؟ مجبورت کنه که بری باهاش زندگی کنی؟ خب من نمیذارم.
تو 100% برنده میشی.
I honestly can't pick the one that I like best because I honestly haven't seen any of them. I actually haven't even heard of any of them before I sat down to write this. You see, those are not the list of the nominees for the Oscar for Best Motion Picture. No, those are the Best Motion Picture nominees for the Canadian Screen Awards. And it seems like I'm not the only Canadian who has not heard of many Canadian movies. A few years ago, Telefilm Canada studied Canadian filmgoers. And what they found is that most English-speaking Canadians could not name or even recognize a Canadian-made film. They even tried to make it easy for people. They took a bunch of the biggest recent Canadian movie releases at the time, and they asked people, have you heard of this one? How about that one? Well, the title that got the most recognition, only 6% of people knew what it was. If you're curious, it was a movie called The F Word. And that's kind of just how it is. Canadian films keep getting made. There are like around 100 theatrical releases every year. And Canadians just keep not watching them. English-speaking Canadians, that is. Things are quite different within Quebec. But yeah, within English Canadian film, that is a problem. Here's another problem. You may have noticed something else about that list that I read of the Best Motion Picture nominees. You may have noticed that a certain title was absent from it that maybe you were expecting. This is that rare year where there actually is a Canadian film that a lot of people could name, that a lot of people have actually seen. And if I had been reading the Oscar nominees for Best Motion Picture, you would hear the name of that film. And that film is Women Talking. Women Talking was, of course, directed by a Canadian, Sarah Polley. It's based on a novel by a Canadian, Miriam Taze. That movie was even filmed in Canada, and it's doing terrifically. As I mentioned, it might win the Oscar this year for Best Picture. But it is not even eligible for a Canadian Screen Award because it was made with American money. And according to the CanCon rules, it is therefore not a Canadian film. So there you go. That's problem number two. And I would say that those are two pretty big problems. But they're also old problems. Our film and TV industry here in Canada has learned to live with those problems for decades. It's just been chugging along, putting out content anyhow. Only now it's facing a new problem. Netflix, and Disney Plus, and Amazon, and all the rest. Canadians, you see, have been cutting our subscriptions to our Canadian cable television broadcasters, and we've been switching over to American streaming services. And when we do so, we have been rapidly draining the funding base of the entire CanCon system. Because the way it works is, every time we used to pay Rogers for a cable TV bill, or Bell or Videotron or any of those Canadian companies for our cable TV services, well, a few pennies automatically went into the budgets of Canadian movies and television shows. That does not happen when our money goes to Netflix instead. And that is why there is now something called Bill C-11. In broad strokes, this is a piece of legislation from the Trudeau government that wants to keep the CanCon system alive for decades to come by applying those old rules that we had for Canadian cable TV broadcasters and shifting them over so they also apply to foreign streamers like Netflix. And that sounds simple enough. But is it? I mean, can you do that? Can you just take rules that were written for TV broadcasters and apply them to internet streamers? And even if you can, should you? I mean, the old system had so many problems. Are we sure that we want to just keep that going into the future? I mean, what is the goal here? Is the goal just to make stuff? Is it just to keep the film and TV industry alive for the sake of the jobs that it creates and the economic activity? Or is the goal, what was the initial goal, to make content that Canadians actually want to watch? And if that is the goal, if that is the problem that we're trying to solve, well, what if it's not a problem anymore? You know, Canadians might not be watching many Canadian-made movies or television shows, but we are watching Canadian content like we never have before. We're watching it on YouTube, on Instagram, on TikTok. So does that stuff count as CanCon? Should it? None of these questions are all that easy to answer, but they are all reaching a decisive turning point as this bill, Bill C-11, moves closer and closer to becoming the law. And for people who work in the industry, in TV and film, this is a bill that is going to change how everything works from now on. Our audio editor, Tristan Capicchione, he was one of those people for many years. Before joining us at Canada Land, he worked as an audio professional for dozens of TV and film projects, composing scores, mixing and designing sound, you name it. Today he's going to look at this and he's going to talk to the people directly affected, movie directors, producers, digital creators too. He's going to find out not just how to keep the industry going, but maybe how to fix it as well.
Canadian television is obviously such a show, and as many people in the industry will say, it's like a total make-work project. Like most Canadian television is made just so it can get made. I mean, that's just the way that it is. I mean, the government mandates a certain amount of it to be created, and so, of course, you're going to make a whole bunch of slime.
This is Matt Johnson, a filmmaker who directed Blackberry, a new film starring Jay Baruchel and Glenn Howerton, telling the story about Canada's once-famous smartphone company, Research in Motion.
Yeah, what can I do for you?
Okay, picture a cell phone and an email machine all in one thing.
What do you call it?
Blackberry.
Huh.
Try typing with your thumbs.
Blackberry is a big dramatic feature with a multi-million dollar budget that stars well-known Hollywood actors. So Matt's come a long way from the first thing he directed, a micro-budget web series from 2006.
Matt! Yeah? Update day!
You know what we should do? We should write a song for our act with titles of Wii games.
Oh.
Super Mario RPG, Sonic the Hedgehog, Donkey Kong 3.
Back then, the internet provided a place for young filmmakers like Matt to showcase their work, try new things, and grow audiences. It was a place to show off your calling card and try and launch yourself in the film and TV industry. And that's what Matt did. He made his first feature film, The Dirties, in 2013, and a few years later, his second feature, Operation Avalanche. His web series was eventually rebooted for actual TV in 2016 when Vice launched their TV channel, Viceland. Now, these films and shows are different from others you might see on TV. Matt took risks that many directors, producers, or even broadcasters might not. You see, Matt wants to make content that pushes boundaries. The Dirties is a dark comedy about some high schoolers making a movie about a high school shooting.
We're planning a school shooting. You want us to kill anybody for you, or?
Good luck with your shooting.
Operation Avalanche, a movie about faking the moon landing, filmed on location at NASA.
We can't land on the moon.
We can make a film that shows us going to the moon without actually doing it.
See, he tricked NASA. He told them that they were film students and were making a documentary about the Apollo program.
We showed up with like our 16mm cameras dressed like we were in the 1960s, and they didn't say a thing. They were like, so what do you guys want to see? And we were like, is the place where they controlled the moon launch still here? And they were like, oh, sure, yeah, we left it exactly the same. We were like, oh, cool. Would you leave us in here for maybe 10, 20 minutes?
And when his show was rebooted, he took some risks there, too.
Permission doesn't exist. You ask, like, the TTC, can we break onto the tracks?
Okay, are you coming or no? Okay, don't get electrocuted!
Yes, you actually see them and the camera person go down onto the tracks, and someone in the background exclaim, what the f*** are you guys doing? He fears the reason we don't see this kind of thing in most CanCon is because of an attitude of risk aversion.
I think there is a Canadian attitude in all media of unbelievable risk aversion. And that risk aversion winds up translating into legal departments and executives at every level of control in this country. And it expresses itself in such a way that if you are doing something that is new or is going to create work for a legal team or is going to create work for executives, something out of their ordinary routine, you'll meet resistance.
That was from an interview on the Toronto International Film Festival's YouTube channel back in 2018.
Oh, yes, I would say that's exactly the problem. Let me agree with myself. I can expand on this idea. Here's how you get fired working at a Canadian funding industry. You take a risk. If the risk goes bad, you're fired. And if that's the only way you can get fired, how is that culture going to turn into a place where young people can come and tell risky stories? If the only way you are going to lose your high-paying government job is by taking a risk. You cannot get fired for making bad movies. You can't get fired for making bad TV shows. A risk is, oh, maybe we should give this 20-year-old free rein and financing to make a movie where she doesn't have a script and doesn't really know what she's going to do, right? And maybe she goes and makes a movie that is, you know, God knows, lascivious about modern sex, is pushing some kind of boundary that then a citizen goes and sees at a cinema and goes, the Canadian government paid for this? Oh my God, I can't believe this. And then they write their local MP, and then that MP goes, why did we finance this? And then the person who did needs to answer for it.
This has kind of happened, by the way, a bunch of times. After the release of David Cronenberg's film Shivers in 1975, for example, there was a controversy in Parliament about film funding and creative expression with reference to Cronenberg's film specifically.
They possess men, women, and children, and drive them to acts of unbelievable horror. No one is safe from them.
But let's take a step back and talk about what Matt said earlier.
Like most Canadian television is made just so it can get made. It's like total make work project. And so, of course, you're going to make a whole bunch of slime.
What he's talking about is the CanCon system, a part of the Broadcasting Act that regulates traditional broadcasters, forcing them to show a minimum amount of Canadian content. It was last updated in 1991.
The government wants Canadian television to look more Canadian, with a lot more Canadian programming and a lot fewer American soap operas and game shows.
As a part of this system, the government and broadcasters must pay into funds that help support the creation of CanCon. Telefilm, which primarily funds films, and the Canada Media Fund, or CMF, which funds TV shows and things like web series as well as games. And when Matt made his first two features, he did it without help from Telefilm.
Hell no. We tried. We begged them for money. If Telefilm had come in and basically given us a kind of very low amount carte blanche funding for the Dirties. The budget of that movie was only like $15,000, right? So if we'd been given that, yes, it would have made our lives a lot easier, of course. But there's something about having to figure out a way to finance movies on your own that maybe changes the process of doing it.
He isn't the only one with complicated feelings towards the CanCon system.
Sure. My name is Andrew Chung. I am a writer, director, producer. I'm also a board member of the Racial Equity Screen Office, and I'm the co-founder of the Asian Canadian Film Alliance.
In January of this year, Andrew went viral with a tweet that read, "No disrespect to working Canadian filmmakers, but my perception of Canadian film is 100 folks hiring each other, giving each other awards, and shunning folks who aren't doing anything to be one of them. Basically, high school. Someone tell me I'm wrong so I can maintain my sanity."
I think it's just the general feeling of working in this industry for years that you just see the same names pop up over and over and over again. And there's way more people out there than just those few names that you see in the media, especially in powerful positions. Obviously, I'm not alone in this, which is why the tweet went somewhat viral, because it's a general feeling that all of us have, like, and regardless of whether we're racialized or not, right? Like, the Canadian film system is a small system. And because of that, it's you know, there's often a lot of gatekeeping that's happening. And it's like, if you're not part of that club or not trying to be part of that club, you're often not looked at somebody of importance or somebody who can actually make good films, right? But once you enter that system, you're suddenly perceived as somebody who can make good films.
Andrew didn't start in film production. Like Matt, he started by making his own indie web series. Ironically, his was called Millions.
You ain't getting a cent from me.
I did my job, Ronnie.
Any kid can get rich today.
We're going to make a mil before 30. That's what we said.
The millions, D. We're going to get those millions.
Debuting in 2014, following appearances at festivals, it cost under $100,000 to make, including $8,000 raised through a Kickstarter for a pilot. The rest of it was mostly funded by Andrew himself.
I studied screenwriting. I worked in development for a couple of years where I did a lot of script reading. And then I worked in distribution as well. And then from there, I just kind of went into production cold turkey and learned hands-on without any training. I just started shooting my own material because I was restless as a creative, and I decided to just produce one of my own projects, which I adapted into a web series. That was like an entire education for me.
He felt like the CanCon system wasn't set up to make the kind of show that he wanted to make.
The material that I was making was not something at the time that anyone was going to greenlight. I wanted to put Asian Canadians on screen, which was non-existent at the time. I think at the time there was a show called Dragon Boys on CBC, which was like a limited series, and it was written by a white guy, and it was conceived by a white guy, and it was about Asian gangsters.
A land where new world and old world collide.
So you're out there acting like a samurai warrior, taking them all on single-handed.
Samurais are Japanese.
Like, that does not represent us, right? You immediately feel like you're not a part of this system. You're not included in this system. So you don't even think about it as something that you can access. Like, it's gotten so much better for people of color. We have a long way to go.
But Andrew pushed through and found a way to make his series work.
I had applied for multiple funds before as a new filmmaker, and it was difficult, right? Because, you know, accessing public funds is not easy, for one, and, you know, it's very competitive. So, you know, I just grew frustrated as a creator. I wanted to make something. And, you know, filmmaking is one of those art forms where, you know, you're at the mercy of funding. It's not like music or painting where you could just kind of pick up a pencil and just start drawing. Like, you're kind of at the mercy of, do I have the money to make this? Do I have the equipment to make this? It's a very long process, the application process, and seeing any money, even when you do get accepted, takes some time. So at the time, I raised money through crowdfunding, and this was back in 2010, and that was pretty much when crowdfunding was born, right? And so when I heard about this new thing, I immediately thought that I could get this money to fund something within 30 days, right? So the immediacy of crowdfunding was very attractive to me as a very driven writer and creator, and just wanting to see something happen without being at the mercy of the gatekeepers here in Canada, right? And, you know, if I didn't have that mentality, I think I would have been stuck for many, many, many years. And I think our reliance on public funds as Canadian filmmakers is probably overweighted.
Full disclosure, CanadaLand recently partnered with a production company called Entertainment One to make a TV docuseries based on our Thunder Bay podcast. Entertainment One has made use of the CanCon system to fund the show. Now, it is uncommon for people like Matt and Andrew to go public with their criticism of the CanCon system. The criticism itself is nothing new, but for two directors who are now a part of that system to bite the hand that feeds, that's pretty rare. I think it has to do with the fact that neither of them got CanCon help when they were first establishing themselves. They are a newer breed of filmmaker, and they know they can make it with or without a bureaucratic stamp of approval. But are they right? Is there something inherently wrong with the system? Is it only producing films and shows just for the sake of filling slots in a broadcaster's schedule? Should the CanCon system be taking bigger risks with shows? That old report I played for you a bit earlier from the last time the act was updated, well, there's actually a little bit more to it.
For the private stations, there's something the government is calling an incentive system. Stations that produce more than the required hours of Canadian content would be paid a bonus. Those that don't would have to pay a penalty. A spokesman for the private station says the government may be asking too much, that the bill should be stressing quality, not quantity.
It'll undoubtedly work at producing more programming. I'm not sure it's going to be more programming that Canadians are going to want to watch.
Taste is subjective, so rather than discuss whether something is good or bad, we can discuss if CanCon is something people actually watch. According to the CMF's most recent annual report, English language program viewing habits show that many Canadians will watch children's and documentary programming, anywhere between 40 and 50% that is Canadian produced, but drama and variety and performing arts are far less, much closer to, say, 20%, with the remaining 80% being entirely foreign. It's worth noting that the CMF's metrics don't include all online streams of Canadian shows. They say that they are missing about 30% of Canadian shows that they finance on platforms like streaming services. So how do we go about making things Canadians want to watch?
I think we need to embrace this let a thousand flowers bloom philosophy, as opposed to we'll make very few movies and put a lot of attention on them and really try to make sure that they're great. I don't think that that is nearly as interesting in trying to finance as many young people as we possibly can, because we are never going to be able to compete with Americans in terms of aesthetics. It's always going to be an uncanny valley between the actors that we get, the sets that we build, and what the Americans are able to do, because we just will never be able to penetrate it. And all the Canadian failures come from people who are trying to ape that style. Whereas, in my opinion, all the major Canadian successes are the ones that break out of that mold and do something new.
We're not really about innovation and, you know, imaginative ideas. I think historically, genre work is not something we see a lot come out of Canada. And those are the things that become internationally successful, like a Squid Game, like a Stranger Things. Like, Canada is not producing shows like that, and we would never see a show like that come out of Canada because we're risk averse, right? You know, we're not taking risks on IPs that are, you know, daring and interesting and innovative, and, you know, not think about what the safe option is and think about what could really put us on the map.
That might also help with another big problem you hear people complain about again and again, the idea that all of our best talents leave to work in the U.S.
The reason why the Canadian actors went south is because the work's not here, right? Or they were shunned. Like, you know, we mentioned Shang-Chi, and like, Simu's a friend of mine, and I've know very well on the inside, like, the whole makings of him going from Kim's Convenience to Hollywood, right? And the way the industry here views him versus in America. You know, he experienced the same hurdles that all of us do here as a person of color, as a Canadian, you know, outsider in the system. They're kind of claiming ownership to these things that they had no involvement in producing the stardom that these Canadians, you know, have received, right? Like, we are responsible as creators to find our success in America, and then, you know, Canada comes back and says, oh yeah, that you were one of us. And I think a lot of successful Canadians in America will feel like, well, you know, you never nurtured my talent. You never nurtured my growth. But now you're claiming ownership to it, as if you played a part in that success.
We've been talking a lot about the CanCon system, how it works and how it could be better. But arguably, that isn't really what Bill C-11, the Online Streaming Act, is about. In many ways, it's about maintaining the status quo, making sure that the system that was already in place doesn't fall apart. You see, broadcasting used to only be available to a few major networks, as well as smaller local stations. And major networks had a monopoly on what Canadians could watch, and they could sell expensive ad slots on the most popular content available, usually American shows. And buying the Canadian broadcast rights to the biggest Hollywood shows, airing them for Canadian audiences, and selling those audiences to advertisers, well, for decades, that was a very easy and lucrative business model for the handful of companies that held broadcast licenses. And to an extent, it still is. But in return, they had to show a few Canadian shows and contribute money to CanCon funds. But now, with the rise of video streamers on the internet, largely owned by foreign companies outside of Canada's normal regulatory purview, broadcasters have been the ones complaining. They've been lobbying the government to fix what they call a two-tiered system. Why should they have to pay into the CanCon system and be forced to air CanCon productions when their biggest competitors don't? The broadcasters and industry leaders called on the government to hold those companies accountable to the same system. On February 2nd, 2022, Heritage Minister Pablo Rodriguez gave them what they wanted.
We're here to talk about the Online Streaming Act. This bill will update our broadcasting rules to include online streamers. It will require them to contribute to the creation and availability of Canadian content.
The government line has consistently been that the bill is not about caving to Rogers, Bell, and a handful of production companies. It's about making streamers promote and fund CanCon and centering Canadian voices and culture. But is that really the goal? Matt isn't so sure.
I think that the deep dark secret is that most federal funding runs on the veneer of saying that they're trying to create a cultural identity, when the truth is all they're trying to do is employ people. It is just a money transferring system from taxpayers to an industry that these agencies feel beholden to. The pressures on these industries are exclusively coming from middlemen, production companies, producers, etc., who are just trying to stay rich. Let's not mistake that. Like, that is who is putting parliamentary pressure on institutions like the CMF, Telefilm, etc. People who are established and are trying to maintain a level of financing. And of course that makes sense, because how are, like, a bunch of 20-year-olds who have no idea how these things work, have zero political power, and are not going to be able to lobby the government for them to have opportunities to develop their voices. And that is what government funding would be doing if they were sincere in their goal of creating a national voice.
Creating a national voice? What does that even mean? What makes CanCon Canadian? If you've gone to the movies recently, you may have seen a video made by an organization called Made New, a branch of the Canada Media Fund, whose mission is to, quote, celebrate the works of Canadian creators in film, television, video games, and digital entertainment, both here and around the world. They launched a promotional campaign with video mashups of Canadian shows.
Well, pitter-patter, let's get at her.
Canadians. Shows like Letterkenny, Schitt's Creek, Kim's Convenience, Workin' Moms. And then they start to show a few other pieces.
Canadian stories for real people.
You're the first female to direct a Pixar movie.
The first Muslim superhero.
The first project with all indigenous...
Turning Red, Shang-Chi, Ms. Marvel, and Deadpool. Some of these things are not like the others. Shang-Chi features Canadian actor Simu Liu from Kim's Convenience. Turning Red, set in Toronto, is directed and co-written by Canadian Domi Shi. And Ms. Marvel stars Canadian actress Iman Vellani. There's also Deadpool, which stars Canadian Ryan Reynolds and is co-written by Canadian Paul Wernick and filmed in Vancouver. All were produced by Disney.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been seeing stuff like this for years where, you know, as soon as it's acknowledged by the American media, it's something we're very proud of. But yeah, I mean, those last few properties that you mentioned, it's not Canadian content.
The film industry in Canada relies heavily on service productions, foreign companies, often American, that choose to film in Canada and take advantage of our talent, but also our generous tax credit system.
Film tax credits, of course, are fundamental to the way the film industry works in Canada and the United States and many other jurisdictions around the world.
This is Mark Allman, a Halifax-based producer.
And the way that works is that the government is basically saying to you, okay, if you can go out there and raise X amount of money from outside of the province and you spend it here in the province on Nova Scotian labor, Nova Scotian equipment and materials, then what happens is that we'll give you a rebate, a portion of those costs back. And so a filmmaker then is able to take the calculations, I will get X amount of tax credit. That can be a cornerstone of your financing. It allows you to go out there to the international marketplace or the national marketplace and say, I know I already have about 30-35% of my financing in place because the government will supply that rebate to me.
To qualify for tax credit programs, your, quote, key creatives are evaluated on the CAVCO, or Canadian Audiovisual Certificate Office, scale. You get points for each Canadian thing you have.
We have this CAVCO scale with a 10 out of 10 points, and you think of 10 out of 10, which is like, you know, writers worth 2 points, cinematographers worth one, editors worth, you know, 1 point.
So when a production company, Canadian or American, wants to apply for a tax credit, they have their key creatives fill out forms saying, yes, I'm a Canadian living in Ontario, here's my information. And with enough of these forms submitted, with enough points on the scale, you can qualify for a tax credit. And so American productions avail themselves of this system all the time to pay for their films and TV shows using Canadian taxpayer funds.
I mean, a lot of American productions will try and get 6 out of 10 points because it opens up, you know, financing opportunities for them. But it still means that they don't necessarily have to have a writer or a director attached, you know, but you need to have everything else.